your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And it remains the greatest nation on God's green earth, despite the fact that here we go again. New charges of foreign meddling in our election process. In fact, charges of Russian meddling. And Russian meddling for what? On behalf of Donald Trump. I actually think that they are aiming at the wrong campaign. No, honestly, they are. I am very concerned about the Russia connection, though not with Trump, who everyone acknowledges has followed a tougher policy on Russia than Obama did, has provided more aid for Ukraine than Obama did. And that's not to say that Trump is so perfect or so wonderful or anything like that, but for goodness sake, the idea that he is some kind of stooge for Vladimir Putin, you know who is a stooge for Russia and has been for a very long time, is the angry guy from Midwood and Brooklyn who's shouting and screaming at billionaires and millionaires and has long-standing Russian connections. Really, long-standing, that are just incredible. Because of this story that is dominating mainstream media, I actually dug up, and you don't have to dig very far, very hard, to see that Bernie Sanders is somebody who has always viewed communist Russia, Soviet Russia, as a benign, positive, generous force in the world. And it is outrageous that anyone out there, anyone who is even listening to me now, is even thinking for a moment of voting for this creep for president of the United States. We will get to that. We'll also get to a brand new policy regarding immigration. And it's a radical policy that says that no immigrants are to be accepted until they can prove that they already have a job lined up and that the job pays at least $33,000 a year. Good policy? Well, it's not in the United States. That is now the policy in Great Britain and the United Kingdom. We'll talk about that and what the implications are for some of our immigration issues here in the United States. We'll also be talking about President Trump weighing in on the Oscars, and I got to say, I agree with them. And we'll also speak a little bit about a demonstration that has broken out in a confrontation regarding a Catholic high school in Burien, Washington, that basically takes the position of the Catholic Church that there is no such thing as gay marriage in the Catholic Church, and that two teachers, gay teachers, who were about to get married, have resigned. And so there are demonstrations, and there is controversy, and there is passion, and there is emotion. And it goes to the very question of what is the nature of religious liberty, and does it have limits? By the way, Trump is in the process of this whole dispute about Trump and Russia. That dispute involves Trump appointing the first ever gay cabinet level appointment in the United States. He's appointed Richard Grenell, our ambassador to Germany, who is a very hardworking, decent guy, and he's not some kind of crazy fringe Trumper. Richard Grenell was a foreign policy advisor to Mitt Romney. He came into the UN and worked at the UN with great distinction and almost universal acclaim under George W. Bush. He is somebody who has been a mainstream Republican conservative who happens to be a gay male. And he is going to be our new acting director of national intelligence. Now, what all of this whole controversy has to do with is a briefing that reportedly occurred last week. It was actually on February 13th that the briefing occurred. But mainstream media are just now catching up with it. And here is the way the issue was covered this morning on NBC News. Listen.
Intelligence officials warned a group of House lawmakers last week that Russia is once again interfering in the 2020 election in an effort to get the president re-elected. A former intelligence official tells NBC News that learning of that briefing so infuriated the president, he complained that Democrats would use the information against him, that caused him to remove the acting director of national intelligence and replace him. Joseph McGuire lost his job, and we're just learning this news this morning.
The president, first of all, is insisting that Admiral McGuire, who is a truly outstanding guy and a stand-up guy, and Trump appointed him, and he was one of Trump's really solid appointments. He's somebody who devoted his entire life to the Navy. If you start reading his service record, it's almost unbelievable. He's one of those naval officers who has done everything right. He's smart as can be. A solid, a patriot with, again, a chest full of decorations, retired vice admiral. And Admiral McGuire served our country well. Now, the Trump administration says that they had decided to replace Admiral McGuire before word of this briefing came out. What is the briefing? This is the way it's covered in the New York Times, Washington Dateline. Intelligence officials warned House lawmakers last week that Russia was interfering in the 2020 campaign to try to get President Donald Trump reelected. Five people familiar with the matter said a disclosure to Congress that angered Trump, who complained that Democrats would use it against him. Well, you know what? The president is right about this. And he is utterly correct in saying that before a briefing with that kind of explosive political tone was given to lawmakers, including, by the way, Adam Schiff, that Trump should have been notified. He should have been told about it. He's president of the United States. This entire operation of national intelligence reports to him. So they should have reported to him, Mr. President, this is what we found, and we are now going to fulfill our constitutional duty in briefing the House on this. I'm not saying for a moment, I don't think President Trump is, that they shouldn't notify the House. In a tweet last night, Schiff said, it appeared that Trump was again jeopardizing our efforts to stop foreign meddling by objecting to Congress being informed of interference attempts. I think his righteous objection is that they'd be informed without letting him know. It says part of the, this is the New York Times again, part of the president's anger over the intelligence briefing stemmed from the administration's reluctance to provide delicate information to Schiff. Now, isn't that justified or appropriate? If Schiff is going to continue as chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and on that basis, the House gets to choose its own chairman, shouldn't it be at least sensitive for people working for the White House to be careful about what information they share with Adam Schiff? And the idea that, first of all, there are two ideas here that are ludicrous. One idea is that it was Russian interference that won the election for Hillary, won the election for Trump, that doomed Hillary's campaign. There, honest to goodness, is no evidence for that. I think we should be very concerned about Russian interference. I think one of the positions that Bill Barr and others in the administration have said, Russian interference in our election was very real in 2016. And it wasn't so much aimed, it seems to me, at electing Donald Trump. Nobody really thought there was a chance of that happening. It was aimed at just sowing dissension in the United States. And I think that's what they're interfering with now, if at all possible. Who knows? Do you think there's Russian interference on behalf of Bloomberg? Well, probably not, because Bloomberg's real ties are with China, his business ties. But the whole idea of Russia right now, after having seen President Trump being relatively tough on Russian interests compared to Obama, The idea that they would want desperately to get Trump reelected over, say, Bernie Sanders, who did honeymoon in Moscow the day after his wedding, He went over to Moscow with his new wife, and they celebrated, and they were thrilled. Wait till you hear the way Bernie talks about that visit, because we'll play it for you. In any event, during the briefing to the House Intelligence Committee, Trump's allies challenged the conclusions, arguing that he had been tough on Russia. That's true. And strengthened European security. That's arguable. Some intelligence officials viewed the briefing as a tactical error. Well, of course it was a tactical error. Saying that had the officials who delivered the conclusion spoken less pointedly or left it out, the conclusion that the Russia was trying to re-elect Trump, they would have avoided angering the Republicans. Though some current and former officials speculated the briefing might have played a role in the removal of Admiral McGuire, who had told people in recent days that he believed he would remain in the job, two administration officials said the timing was coincidental. Okay, it may be or may not be. The point is that Richard Grenell, our ambassador to Germany, and by the way, a brilliant guy who went originally to an evangelical college in Missouri, Evangel College, and later on to Harvard, before serving again at the UN and in many administrations, and he is a qualified guy and another decent appointment for President Trump. So basically, you have this freak out going on in mainstream media, and again, with chance of Russia, 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 and Russian interference on behalf of Trump, when meanwhile, hiding in plain sight is the Bernie Sanders-Russia connection. Now, I'm not saying anything here about the fact that all of his grandparents are of Russian Polish ancestry. Poland used to be part of Russia until the end of World War I. Poland, from 1815 until 1918, Poland was actually a province of Russia, most of historic Poland. And look, Bernie's ancestors and his father, because his father was not American born. And by the way, both Bernie's parents died very young. They had hard lives. They were poor. And I also found out, and I didn't know this, Bernie was captain of his track team in high school. Which is hard to believe. That was back in the 19th century, of course. But look, Bernie's ancestors, Polish, Russian, Jewish, that's not the reason to assume that he has some favoritism toward Russia, because most immigrants from Poland and Russia, like my father's family, hated the Russian regime, hated the communist regime, and opposed it. But Bernie Sanders always identified with it. In 1963, right after he got married the first time, 1963, he got married to a woman, a fellow socialist he had met at University of Chicago. And they went over and worked for 3 months on a pro-Russian, communist, Stalinist kibbutz, collective farm in Israel. It's called Sha'ar Ha'amikim, which is the gates of the valleys. And what's interesting about that particular kibbutz, that collective farm where they worked as volunteers, is it became very controversial in Israel because it promoted Russia over anything Israeli. And in fact, one of the leaders of the kibbutz was convicted of espionage on behalf of Russia. Now, I'm not saying that Bernie Sanders is a Russian spy, but I am saying that Bernie Sanders, the current Democratic front runner, came back from the Soviet Union in 1988. He had just established, it was his initiative, a sister city, I think with the city of Yaroslavl in Russia. And here's what he had to say in glowing terms about Russia, and this is before the fall of communism. This is when it was still an evil empire, when the wall in Berlin was still up. And this is during the Reagan era of the United States, where President Reagan identified Russia, rightly, as the evil empire, the Soviet Union. But Bernie had this to say about how impressed he was by what he found over in the Soviet Union. Listen.
I was impressed by the youth programs that they have, their palaces of culture for the young people, a whole variety of young of programs for young people, and cultural programs which go far beyond what we do in this country. We went to a theater in Slavl, which was absolutely beautiful, had three separate stages where cultural programs are put on by professional actors and actresses, including a puppeteer area. And the cost, the highest price of a ticket that you can get, was the equivalent of $1.50.
All of this is propaganda. In other words, when he talks about these performances there, this is something that I really, really care about, is a guy saying that this culture is so wonderful. Look, I happen to love a lot of Russian music. And one of the things that went wrong with Russian music was some very talented composers being forced, literally on pain of death, to write and produce propaganda. And these performances that he was so impressed with are about how we, the young pioneers, are marching to the future. They're glorifying people like Pavlik Morozov, who was a hero to Komsomol, which is the young pioneers. That's their equivalent of the Boy Scouts in the bad old days of the Soviet Union. You know who that kid was? He was a kid who informed on his parents in Ukraine because they were, quote, hoarding food, and got his parents executed. And he's a hero to today's Soviet youth. That's the kind of cultural performances that so much impressed Mayor Sanders at the time. And he wasn't a child. He was already an adult, for goodness sake, in 1988. Listen, he was also impressed not just with the cultural offerings, but, oh my goodness, public transportation. It was a dream over there in Russia. Listen.
Point out that when we were in Moscow, for example, I think most of the people here also were extremely impressed by their public transportation system. The stations themselves were absolutely beautiful, including many works of art, chandeliers that were beautiful. It was a very, very effective system.
You can do that when you build it with slave labor. And they, honestly, this was built like much of that stuff in the Stalin era with the reality of slave labor. And then he spoke about his traveling buddies, spoke with one of his traveling buddies to the Soviet Union and said this about the sign of deprivation over there.
We didn't do a study of these things, but people there seem reasonably happy and content. I didn't notice much deprivation. Howard, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's real fair. It was, I was really surprised by the beauty of the city. And in many ways, I think it's a good partner for Berlin because the pace of life there was pretty similar to here. People were very open and friendly.
There's a term called Potemkin villages. And people who know Russian history know what that is. It goes back to the reign of Catherine the Great. And one of her chief advisors and her lover, in fact, for a long time, was Count Potemkin. And when foreigners would come to take a look at Russia, they would set up these model villages that nobody lived in just to show people how beautiful and wonderful it was. There are people in the United States, in my new book, God's Hand on America, I cite Vice President Henry Wallace, who was a hero to Bernie Sanders because he was pro-Russian and he was duped by communist propaganda. What no one tells you about Henry Wallace is he saw through it. Has Bernie Sanders ever seen through it? Has he ever rejected his infatuation with Soviet communism? We'll get to that. And more stuff you won't believe coming up right here on The Michael Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, there's a report from the American Enterprise Institute and Danielle Pletka, who's an outstanding writer on U.S. foreign and defense policy. And she writes, after visiting Moscow in 1988, Bernie Sanders praised the Soviet system, you just heard some of it, and established a sister city relationship with his hometown of Burlington, Vermont. Throughout his time in office, Sanders regularly hobnobbed with and supported communist, anti-American, and anti-Israel leaders. It's worth considering. One other thing worth considering, and then we'll go to your calls, 1-800-955-1776. The other thing that's worth considering is right now, you need a historical background in all of this. It's very, very important. And it's why right now, in the middle of this campaign, we're offering a flash sale for the complete Medved History Library. Some of you may have heard on President's Day, Monday of this week, we played our Miracle of Lincoln history program. These history programs are all available now. They're available on a flash drive, USB flash drive, or loaded on an MP3 player. It's 75% off. This will be running over the weekend. Go to MedvedHistoryStore.com. That's MedvedHistoryStore.com. And when you're there, I hope you'll consider getting a copy of my brand new best-selling book, God's Hand on America. It's the case for divine providence. And part of divine providence that I write about in the book has to do with a guy named Henry Wallace, who was a brilliant guy in many ways, very strange guy, but had been completely suckered as a young man by commie propaganda. He had, and was deeply involved with Stalinism. And in fact, when he ran for president as an independent after his vice presidency, he basically, his entire staff was members of the Communist Party, and there were Democrats who peeled away from it because of Wallace's pro-Stalin position in 1948, much later in his life. And this is something you will never read, but it's a very big factor in my book, God's Hand on America. Henry Wallace turned away from that evil system. He wrote a courageous piece called Where I Was Wrong. And it talks about him touring Russia while he was vice president and how they showed him only what they wanted to show him. And basically duped him. And recognizing, and he writes it, that this system was evil from the beginning. And by the way, I was about to say until its end, but it's not over. Because Vladimir Putin is a representative of this evil system. And my book, God's Hand on America, which I honestly want every American to read, obviously. But it's available now. You can get your own signed copy in hardcover at MedvedHistoryStore.com. And when you do, you also get a three-month free subscription as a MedHead listener, which gives you 24/7 access to this radio program, commercial-free. 3 months free subscription when you order God's Hand on America. Let's go to Steve in Tacoma, Washington. Steve, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hey, how you doing, Michael?
I'm doing okay.
Good. I listened to you talking about how Trump has been hard on Russia. He gave him a couple of anti-tank missiles. He's been Russia's dream. He gave him Syria. They crushed the Kurds with Assad's forces. He's doing it now, crushing our allies. He gave him Crimea. Well, Obama gave him Crimea. Trump's done nothing to take it back. That's the only part of the Ukraine they want. They've wanted a warm water port since Peter the Great.
Okay, but guess what? It's not the only part of the Ukraine they want. They are also on Donbass. They are continuing to wage war on eastern Ukraine. And the point over here is I'm not trying to say that Trump has not been a hardliner on Russia, but to say he's given them everything they want, one of the things they would have wanted would be an end to sanctions, which Trump has not at all approved. And again, I think it was foolish for the president in Helsinki to say that he believed Vladimir Putin more than his own intelligence operation. I think that was foolish. But if you take a look at people who go back and compare the Obama administration. And you remember, of course, the famous interchange between Obama and then-Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. Do you remember that?
Yes. He gave him a little nickel. Trump's given him the bank.
What has Trump given them?
Syria. He gave them Syria.
He did not give them Syria. We didn't have
He's
troops
talking
in
about pulling us out of Afghanistan, out of their backyard. They hate us there. He's giving them literally everything they want.
Do you have any evidence at all that somehow the American presence in Afghanistan is somehow a threat to Russia or opposed to Russia? It isn't. The Russians cleared out of Afghanistan first.
They know we're right there, our army on their back door. They don't want us there. They don't want us in Turkey.
Okay, but we don't have an army that's any threat to Russia in Afghanistan. We have a limited number of troops who have been unable to hold their own against the Taliban. Russia, I think you're correct that Russia prefers to have Afghanistan as a total chaos and a disaster. And frankly, the jury is still out in terms of what is going to happen with the negotiations with the Taliban, which I think are probably a bad idea. But having said that, let me just give you some perspective on something. This is from Noah Rothman, who is writing on Trump's Russia policy. Okay, this is in Commentary Magazine, which has been for 50 years, no, for 70 years, has been one of the most hardline voices on Russian policy. Noah Rothman, who is, by the way, a never-Trumper, a no-Trumper at least, Noah wrote, Trump not only declined to soften the sanctions the Obama administration imposed on Moscow in response to Russian election interference, he strengthened them, and he imposed new sanctions as well. The White House also pursued Magnitsky Act sanctions against close Putin associates, a step the Obama administration was disinclined to take. The Trump administration seized Russian diplomatic property in the United States and expelled Russian diplomats. It sold interceptor missiles and liquid natural gas to Poland. It opened Ukraine's access to lethal weaponry. It presided over the expansion of NATO despite Moscow's active opposition. It has engaged in kinetic and diplomatic efforts to degrade the capacity of Russia's partners in the Middle East, Syria, and Iran. It has even gone so far as to engage in set-piece land battles with Russian mercenaries. Look, I think you can accuse Trump of many things. And the only reason that I think anyone could even possibly suggest that Russia would favor President Trump in this election cycle would be because there are problems about the stability of NATO, particularly with Brexit going on. Russia would probably like to see the whole Atlantic alliance break up. But the strong alliance of the United States with Great Britain under Boris Johnson, that's not something that is in Russia's interest. Steve, I appreciate your call and your challenge. There's more about Bernie Sanders and what a Bernie Sanders nomination would mean to the Democratic Party and to the nation. Why should Republicans care? I'll tell you why, coming up on The Medved Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. That's 1-800-955-1776. More of Michael Medved in a moment. Medhead member today.
A big fan and Medhead.
For commercial-free shows, commentaries, musings, and the greatest podcast on God's green earth. All at michaelmedved.com.
And don't forget about the flash sale that's going on over the weekend starting today. We've already gotten a bunch of orders that have come in. go to michaelmedved.com or go to medvedhistorystore.com. You get the entire Medved History Library. That's some 80 titles on everything ranging from a moment-to-moment account of the Revolutionary War to stories about our greatest heroes, ranging from Washington to Lincoln to Theodore Roosevelt to Martin Luther King to Ronald Reagan. All of that available at the Medved History Library. These are our history programs going back for years. It's available on a flash drive or loaded on an MP3 player. Go to medvedhistorystore.com. 75% off. This is only for a few days. Let me go back into history just a little bit, because this is worth very much talking about. And Bernie Sanders has gone for his romantic honeymoon in Yaroslavl of the USSR. Yes, it was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. And he comes back in 1988. And he was asked by an interviewer, because Bernie was already involved in socialist politics, about how we can make America more like Russia. How can we institute socialism and social justice here in the United States? Here's what Bernie said.
Are you self-described socialist? What is your vision of socialism in America?
Well, my belief is, my very strong belief is that this nation, because of its incredible wealth, its technology, its natural resources, in fact, has the capabilities of providing a decent standard of living for every man, woman, and child. And that's just not, at this point, a utopian vision. The distribution of wealth in this country, as you may or may not know, is one of the most unfair and distorted in the entire world.
But how can you practically change that very uneven distribution?
Well, I think you can change it politically. I think you change it through tax laws. I think you change it through public ownership of significant parts of the economy.
Public ownership of significant parts of the economy. That's what being a democratic socialist means. There's also the associate editor of Real Clear Politics, A.B. Stoddard, was on MSNBC after the Democratic disaster known as a debate on Wednesday night. And she said this.
It was an unmitigated disaster, and Bernie and Trump won the night. And I think the Democrats, no one made the case that not only would a Bernie nomination reward Trump at the second term, but a huge mandate to just wreck the rule of law and everything else path to, but it'd be the end of the Democratic Party. You can't nominate a socialist and come back within generations.
A Democratic socialist, that is not the same.
Whatever.
It's not a whatever. You could like Bernie Sanders or not, but you have
but
to
Trump
give this
senator. But Trump will say we're going to be Venezuela, and everyone will believe him.
Fine.
And that, by the way, is another issue on which Trump has stood up to the Russians, is the issue of Venezuela and the support for Juan Guaido and the opposition to Nicolás Maduro, the dictator, pro-Russian, pro-communist dictator of Venezuela. There's also Cuban policy, much more. David in Woodinville, Washington, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Good afternoon, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I listen
you
to
bet.
The program frequently, and I enjoy it very much.
Thank you.
I have noticed on my Democratic election ballot, on the return envelope, it's mandatory that you declare yourself Republican or Democrat. And I'm neither one. I'm independent. So I wonder what they're up to.
I'll tell you very simply, what they're up to is the primary election in the state of Washington for president. Now, for governor, you don't have to declare yourself. If you want to participate in the Democratic primary and vote against Bernie Sanders, for instance, which I would urge everybody to do, you can only do that if you're a declared member of the Democratic Party. There are a lot of states that have that. Here's how it works in Washington. Is Tim Iman, who you know of, who is an anti-tax crusader, he's running as an independent, and he may clear the primary, because when it comes to the primary for governor, you don't have to declare a party. Everybody votes, and the top two finishers go on to the general election. And whether Jay Inslee will be one of the incumbent governor will be one of them, and it's possible that his main opponent will be Tim Iman. I hope that's not the case. I hope one of the Republicans who's running makes it. But it's that's what you're dealing with.
This is the ballot for president.
Correct. And that's the only one in the primary election where you have to declare yourself. When you're voting for president in November, there won't be any requirement at all to declare your party affiliation. Follow?
If I do not, then will they invalidate my vote?
They'll invalidate your vote in the primary,
right?
But not your vote for other issues. I'm almost sure that's the case. By the way, there is news today. I don't know if you heard. A judge has declared that Tim Iman concealed $766,000 in campaign donations. A judge has ruled that initiative promoter Tim Iman illegally failed to report more than $766,000 in campaign contributions over a six-year period. This from Thurston County Superior Court Judge James Dixon. He issued his ruling this morning in a lawsuit brought against Iman by the Attorney General of the state. That's lawsuit Bob Ferguson. That was brought in 2017. David,
well,
good luck.
I would like to vote for Trump in this primary. But I'm
well, then you have to. You can
declare myself a Republican. I don't want to get on the list.
Well, frankly, I understand that you would like to vote for Trump, but the only way to vote for Trump in the Republican Party is to declare yourself as a Republican. I believe. I'm not even sure how they're working it, but it's one of those things. I don't really believe President Trump has any opposition for the Republican nomination in our state of Washington. Hey, listen, good luck, David. And I hope everything works out for our state and for our country. Bernie Sanders is also not only deeply associated historically with Russia, but he also, if he's nominated by a major party, he'd be the first major party nominee to be openly distanced from any religious feeling at all. And how do I mean? Listen to Bernie talking just recently on a CNN town hall, Bernie talking about his religious beliefs.
You know, everybody practices religion in a different way. To me, I would not be here tonight. I would not be running for president of the United States if I did not have very strong religious and spiritual feelings. I believe that as a human being, the pain that one person feels, if we have children who are hungry in America, if we have elderly people who can't afford their prescription drugs, you know what? That impacts you, that impacts me. And I worry very much about a society where some people spiritually say, it doesn't matter to me, I got it, I don't care about other people. So my spirituality is that we are all in this together, and that when children go hungry, when veterans sleep out on the street, it impacts me. That's my very strong spiritual feeling.
And huge applause. Should the applause continue, we'll get to that in this greatest nation on God's green earth.